We are coming to the end of our series in Jonah, and we're going to be in Jonah chapter 4. Now, again, it's Do You Do Well to Be Angry, Jonah 4, part 2. So it's not just the end of our series, it's not just culminating the end of the book of Jonah, but it's truly a part 2 in this unpacking, Do You Do Well to Be Angry? How many of you enjoy prequels? So that would be like Star Wars, the early ones. That would be different ones that, again, you're kind of hearing the backstory. There's a lot of people out there that do, okay? There is actually, I added up the numbers, and just from Star Wars 1, 2, and 3, it grossed $2.6 billion, those three movies put together. And so just that's amazing to me. People were flocking to the theaters to hear about Darth Vader and what his old name was, Anakin Skywalker, right? And so when the first Star Wars released, we didn't enter episode 1, but instead we entered episode 4. And so even today, the saga continues. They're getting ready to make more Lucasfilms. But again, there's something to be said about going back so you can go forward. Mark Batterson makes the point that we tend to remember what we should forget and forget what we should remember. Pastor Batterson says that. The Israelites are classic when it comes to this. Why do I share all of this? Because the author of Jonah is purposeful in where he ends the story. Look at it for yourself. He doesn't end the story after the 40 days. Jonah states when we read last week, again in chapter 4, and you can turn to it, "O Lord, is not this what I said when I was yet in my country? This is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster." You see, the author doesn't end with God relenting from disaster. In fact, you can point that verse out in Jonah 3:10. It already tells what took place after the people repented and Jonah's response to that. Now, the author of Jonah will rewind to finish the book of Jonah. Why? Well, ultimately, I'll leave you to decide that. But the book of Jonah is left hanging. There's no Last Jedi, right? There's no Force Awakens. We're not told what happens next. We're left at a cliffhanger. And so let's read that together. Jonah 4, starting in verse 5, "Jonah went out to the city and sat to the east of the city and made a booth for himself there. He sat under it in the shade till he should see what would become of the city. Now the Lord God appointed a plant and made it come up over Jonah that it might be a shade over his head to save him from his discomfort. So Jonah was exceedingly glad because of the plant." I want you to remember that part. He was exceedingly glad because of the plant. But, how many know there's a lot of buts in life, right? But when it came, when dawn came up the next day, God appointed a worm that attacked the plant so that it withered. When the sun rose, God appointed a scorching east wind, and the sun beat down on the head of Jonah so that he was faint. And he asked that he might die and said, "It's better for me to die than to live." And so Jonah, he's upset here, right? He's angry here about what's taken place. And then it says, "But God said to Jonah, do you do well to be angry?" Remember, he said this back in earlier in chapter 4 before we did a rewind, right? "Do you do well to be angry for the plant?" For the plant. So here he says, for the plant. And he said, "Yes, I do well to be angry, angry enough to die." And the Lord said, "You pity the plant." Remember that word, pity. "You pity the plant for which you did not labor, nor did you make it grow, which came into being in a night and perished in a night. And should not I pity Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle. Last week, we ended our sermon with a parable, the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I'd venture to say that the book of Jonah ends with a parable, an illustrative sermon at the least. What do you mean, Pastor John? Well, Jonah wants to get a front row seat to the desolation, right? He has preached in Nineveh, and now he comes up, he sits on this hill, and he begins to make a booth to sit in for those 40 days while he waits for the destruction to take place. See how it's a rewind? And Jonah 3:10 states what God did after the 4 days and how Jonah responded. Now we're in the midst of the 40 days and Jonah is setting up his home theater. Jonah's not watching an action movie though, is he? He's setting up a seat to watch others be terminated. Get to the chopper. Who's your governor? Come with me if you want to live. No, this is not an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. This is real life. And so he hates those people and he can't wait to see their destruction. So he sets up a home theater to watch this destruction take place with this booth that he sets up. Do you know anybody like that who wants to see harm come to you? They're just waiting for you to mess up. I'm reminded of Daniel. And Daniel had people like that in his life, that as Daniel was getting promoted, people hated him. They hated that he was successful. They hated his character, integrity, and honor that made him shine in the midst of his workplace, and they wanted to see him go down. Right? And so what did they do? They were not only setting him up to mess up, they were not only watching for him to mess up, they set up a plan. Right? They set up a plan where it would attack his most precious time, and that was the time of prayer that he prayed to his God. Right? And you know, Daniel was very open. He'd open up his windows, and he would pray, and he would seek the Lord. And they attacked him at that point. They set him up. But how does God respond now, as we're looking in Jonah, to the raw hate that Jonah has? He helps Jonah. What? He helps Jonah. That this man that's full of hate, this man that is getting ready to want to watch destruction of a people. This is, again, not pretend, but for real. But you'll see what happens. Jonah builds this booth, which was a temporary dwelling, similar to the booths Israelites built during the Feast of Booths. And they build these to remember the time that they were in where? Where were they? In the desert, right? They were in the wilderness. And so they build these booths to remember when they were in the wilderness, these temporary dwellings. And Jonah would have made it with his own hands, but obviously this booth needed some help. Right? How many of us know we tell our kids, go do this, and they go do it, and we're like, oh, you need some help with that. That's not a very good looking booth, right? So God does this. He helps Jonah. God appointed a plant to come over Jonah that it might be shade over his head to save him from his discomfort. See, God helps Jonah and gives him something better than what he could build. And you may be sitting here today angry about how life has treated you. Why do the unrighteous prosper? Why does it seem like the bad guy is getting ahead? Listen, in this story, Jonah waits for their demise. He stood in open rebellion against God. The guy that should be the good guy isn't the good guy. And the world seems upside down. And maybe that's where you're at today. And I'm here to tell you that this is not the end. And although the world seems hickledy-pickledy, it's not going to stay this way. God orchestrates many things in this book. He orchestrates the storm when Jonah rebels. He knows that Jonah can't swim, so he saves him with this great fish taking him. And not only that, he works in a supernatural way to keep Jonah alive for 3 days. God orchestrates him coming up on the beach. But that is not where the orchestration ends, right? A lot of times when we think of Jonah, as we've gone through this series, we think of the classic, he's in the, we call it the whale, for 3 days, and he comes up, and man, that's, you know, that's it. That's not where it ends. Now God brings a gourd. It's a fast-growing plant. And in my research, this plant did not have to grow miraculously, but it definitely grew rapidly. And Jonah enjoys its shade. The Bible says Jonah was exceedingly glad about the plant. This is the only part of the whole book where it shows Jonah's just raw excitement and great expression of unadulterated happiness. He is stoked about this plant. And I wonder if in this moment Jonah thinks, wow, God is truly blessing me. I am so right in my actions. It's obvious. Look at this gourd. Look at this plant that grew up just for me in this place where my booth was. How awesome is that? I'm right in my actions. I'm right to hate one of the greatest enemies in Jewish history. And now they're going to get what they deserve. As many of you know, I grew up in New York State, upstate New York, near Albany. And I went to an awesome school, and that was Evangel University. That's in Springfield, Missouri, kind of far from each other, right? And so during the holidays, I would fly home from time to time. But how many know flights are expensive, right? And so even in the 2000s, right? And so again, I met this guy on my floor in Lewis Hall. His name was Chris. And Chris was a Teen Challenge grad, and we connected well. And he was from New York, and so he said I could ride with him. And so we took a road trip from Missouri all the way back to New York. And so we're driving. He's driving. It's his vehicle, and he wanted to drive the whole way. And he starts going over 80 in a 65. And so I say politely to him, I'm like, hey, Chris, you know, you might want to slow down here. Going a little fast there. And he goes, oh, no, it's all right. It's all right. And he's driving for a while over 80 in a 65. And he even makes the point to me. He looks over, he laughs, and he says, see, God is totally great with this. God's blessing me in driving over the speed limit. Not 5 minutes later, we have a cop car zoom right behind our behind and pull us over, and we get a ticket. He gets a ticket. And so I didn't smush it in his face. I didn't make it a big, big deal. But inwardly, there was definitely a little bit of a chuckle. Okay? Wasn't this similar to what happened to Jonah and what happens to many of us? We think we're getting away with something. With the gourd, Jonah may have thought God was even blessing his home theater of destruction. But God blessed the plant for a reason. The same God who brought great growth that provided Jonah with shade is the same God who brought the worm. He's the same God that brought the scorching east wind and the hot sun ablaze down on him, with the effect that caused Jonah to be faint. Jonah, man, his life, and this is why it's kind of, you know, this is, I enjoy reading the Bible, of course, but man, Jonah's life is a roller coaster of emotions. He's this successful prophet. We're going, tum, 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 tum. We're going up the roller coaster, right? But then he's a runner in rebellion. We're going down. And then he admits his wrong as the Lord spews him out of the big fish, right? But he's unwilling to sacrifice on his own. Remember that part? Remember, actually, so let's rewind a little bit. So again, he's not even in the water yet. And he doesn't even say, guys, I messed up. I'll jump in the water. He makes them do it. He said, throw me in the water. I'm wrong. Maybe I'll die. He throws this death thing out there all the time. He's kind of a drama queen, okay? And he's like, just throw me in the water. And they even pray, God, don't hold this against me, but here we go. They throw him in, right? This roller coaster with him. Then he prays, and the Lord saves him, and he seemingly repents. at least in pretense. And then he thanks God, then he goes half-heartedly to preach to Nineveh. And then the king has to preach the rest of the sermon, right? So he waits in hate. This is where he's going down again. But he's so glad for the shade. But then when the plant dies, he wants to die because of a hot wind. You know what I would say to Jonah? I'm not trying to be mean, but get up and go back to Jerusalem, Jonah. You don't have to sit here watching these people as you think they might be destroyed. Get up. Go back to your home. You don't have to stay out here. Church, our joy should not be based on our circumstances. Okay, I get Jonah had some pretty extreme circumstances, but there's no one hunting him down for his life. I want you to think about some other prophets. I want you to think about Elijah. Who did he have in his life that was hunting him down? Jezebel, right? Jezebel and King Ahab, right? And then Jeremiah, he's preaching, everything's happening, and people get mad at him, and they throw him in this deep, dark cistern. They had to lower him down by ropes. The mud is thick, 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 and he's almost going to sink so much that he actually drowns in mud in the midst of the cistern until one guy speaks up and gets him out. Okay? These guys approach near death and they cry out to their God and they feel some real sorrow. Nobody's hunting Jonah down. If he goes back to his hometown, he's viewed as a successful prophet that prophesied the expanding during Jeroboam II. Okay? And Jonah, with this is going on, he's like, woe is me. Oh, I just want to die. Is it because you'll only be happy if someone you hate gets what you think you deserve, Jonah? Has your whole life, Jonah, become consumed with the rage, anger that you now store in your heart? Guys, hate will consume. Anger can consume you. Guilt that is not godly sorrow can consume you. Where are you putting your thoughts? Where are you putting your thoughts? God will use something as simple as a plant and the raw elements to give Jonah an illustrative sermon. This is where God develops this question deeper. Do you do well to be angry? I love the way that this question is even posed, because Jonah's not doing well emotionally. He's not doing well physically. He's not doing well spiritually. His anger is consuming him. And obviously the best way to understand this question restated is, are you justified in your anger? And this is the question that God will unpack. Notice the restatement in this flashback. Do you do well to be angry for the plant? God is picking a different subject to unpack. He's now talking about the plant. And what is Jonah's reply? Yes, I do well to be angry. Angry enough to die. From an outside perspective, isn't this the place where you want to go, come on, Jonah. You want to die because of a plant? Did you know every day needless plants die because of human beings? They do. Have you ever saw those skits that poke fun of vegetarians? Instead of animals dying, the meat eaters turn it around. They say stuff like, plants give off oxygen. Why would you eat them? How could you? Broccoli, that's what my food eats, and I don't appreciate you eating what my food eats. Okay? That coconut that you're holding right there in your hand, that was going to grow into a palm tree. Why would you eat that? How about this statement? I could never eat plants that were raised in a crowded farm in inhumane living conditions with less than 1 square inch of space per stalk in their soil against their will. We laugh, right? Or hopefully we laugh. But Jonah is at the point of fighting with God over a plant. Over a plant. And Jonah didn't want self-denial. He liked self-preservation. Yet ironically, when he was that was taken away, he wanted a quick end. Scott Hagen, the new president of North Central, another one of our Assemblies of God schools, says this: being bold only works if what you're saying is true. Being bold only works if what you're saying is true. Jonah was pretty bold in his arguments with the Most High, shaking his fist about his right to be angry over the plan. But what he was saying was not true, because what he was truly communicating is, I deserve mercy, I deserve blessing, and the Ninevites don't. In truth, neither deserves mercy. We don't deserve mercy. That's the essence of mercy. But God in his nature gives it out lavishly. We have no right to be angry when God blesses our enemy. Another great, great quote from Scott Hagen is this: never insult suffering by confusing it with inconvenience. Never insult suffering by confusing it with inconvenience. Jonah wasn't incurring righteous persecution like we talked about with Jeremiah and Elijah, or suffering when his gourd died. He was confusing righteous suffering of a prophet with selfish inconvenience that a plant that he once benefited from is now gone. God doesn't let Jonah wallow in his suffering, or quote-unquote suffering. The Lord's response is telling. You pity the plant for which you didn't labor, nor did you make it grow. Jonah, you had nothing to do with this thing, which came into being in a night and perished in a night. Should I not pity Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle? Here's the big reveal through this illustration. Jonah, you care so much about plants, but you don't care about people. You care so much about your stuff, but you don't care about people. And then the Lord throws in, and even their animals. And even their animals. The prophet Nathan did this big reveal with King David, didn't he? David is enjoying his plant. Oh wait, it's not a plant, is it? It's a woman. Bathsheba. He connived, he cheated, he murdered, and he covered up his sin. And David thinks he's gotten away with it, and he's enjoying the fruit of his sin until Nathan walks in. And Nathan begins to tell a story about a shepherd, and David can relate. David was a shepherd. He loved shepherding. He loved those little lambs that he took care of. And Nathan tells of a man who had one sheep and a man who had many sheep. And he speaks how this less wealthy man loves his sheep, and how the rich man stole that precious sheep. And David demands justice. He's irate at this man's sin. And Nathan says, you are that man. Bathsheba is the sheep, David. And Uriah, who you killed, is that wonderful shepherd. David struck to the heart. His intentions, everything he tried to hide, is laid out in the open. God does the same for Jonah. Jonah, Nineveh is my plant that I love. And it's a people that brings me joy. You're so angry about the death of a plant, but I have 120,000 people who are actually repenting. They're calling out for me. They're asking for forgiveness. And he says this about them: they do not know their right hand from their left. This was a Jewish statement about their children. The most precious thing to the Jewish people was their children. Easy to relate to, right? These people are just as ignorant as your people's children. And should I not pity Nineveh? God asks here again another question. Should I not pity Nineveh? It bears repeating, right? I know not all of you are Lord of the Rings fans, okay? But in the Lord of the Rings, Frodo says to Gandalf, it's a pity Bilbo, who was his uncle, didn't kill Smeagol, one of the bad guys, right? When he had the chance. And Gandalf responds with a question. Pity? It was pity that stayed Bilbo's hands. Many live that deserve death. Some of them who die deserve life. Can you give it to them, Frodo? Do not be eager to deal out death and judgment. Even the very wise cannot see all ends. He says, my heart tells me that Gollum has some part to play, for good or evil, before this is over. The pity of Bilbo may rule the fate of many. If you've watched the movies and read the books, in the end, this was true. Gollum played a vital part in the destruction of evil. So what is the point of this sermon? There's one big idea. God has every right to show mercy to all nations and peoples, and we, like Jonah, have no right at all to think that some are intrinsically less deserving than others of his mercy. Jonah needed God to use a gourd to wake him up to his hate and his selfishness. David needed a sheep to wake him up to his selfishness and his murderous act and adultery. What right do you have to be angry? God rebukes with a question. Then the narrator flashes back to the event he has chosen as a coda to conclude the book, the story of the gourd. And in this sense, the second section may be understood as a kind of explanation of that question as we've unpacked it this morning, the last week in the beginning of chapter 4, again, we're unpacking today. The audience is left with a choice. Do I copy Jonah's embarrassing and ridiculous hatred of his enemies, or do I see the world as God sees it? A world greatly in need of mercy. This morning, I leave you with that choice. Worship team, would you come up at this time? Would you bow your heads with me? My prayer is this: Lord, may we see a world in great need of mercy. May you open our eyes. May we stay our own personal hand of judgment and instead embrace a heart to reach out to the ignorant, those who don't spiritually know their right hand from their left. Father, you care about them. You truly care about them, and we should as well. I pray all these things in Jesus' precious name. Amen. Amen.